right, we have one case on our 10:30 docket in the interest of JB. Ms. Harrell?
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be back before this court again. This case has five issues involved in it, and I've grouped them into three areas for argument. I would like to address that there are no pleadings to support the relief granted. I would like to address the legal and factual sufficiency to support a termination, and the legal and factual sufficiency to support a bill of review in this case. First, it should be important to note that this child has a presumed father. Section 160.204, which is under tab G of the appellant's brief, shows that he also has an adjudicated father. 160.204 is the presumed father statute. The other side is the adjudication, which is a child support review order that was entered in this matter. I believe it is undeniable to show that there are no pleadings to support the relief granted in this case. If you have a bill of review, you must plead, first and foremost, that you have a meritorious defense, that you are prevented from making at the trial of the cause due to the fraud, accident, or wrongful act of the opposing party or an official mistake, and it's unmixed with any fault or negligence on your own behalf. And that is Caldwell versus Barnes, which is cited in our brief. Termination is governed by, in this case, because it's a voluntary termination, section 161.005 of the Family Code, and that's under tab L of the appellant's brief. And the standard for that is the best interest of the child. Here, the pleadings deny paternity in response to the Office of the Attorney General's intervention in this case, where it sought to establish child support for the one child that is the subject of this suit, SCB. And the Attorney General also requested support for the other two children, but they are not involved in this particular appeal. And the answer simply denied paternity of SCB and then asked that we be denied our support and medical support that we were seeking for SCB. It also included an allegation of fraud, but that was made against the mother and was done as a damages action. And the fraud, of course, was her misrepresentation to the father that SCB was indeed his biological child. And that petition, or part of the answer, requested damages as a counterclaim against the mother in this case. But there was no mention of any of the elements of a bill of review, no request to vacate the prior child support review order, no mention of a termination or request that the parental rights be terminated. All that was
What was the time frame between the original judgment establishing paternity?
I want to say that was a 2002 deal. It was they were within 4 years to have brought a bill of review on it when this was filed. So that the time frame is not an issue had they bothered to plead one and actually even pursue one at trial.
And nothing about the pleadings mentioned bill of review, and there was no request to amend the pleadings?
None whatsoever.
To conform with the rules of procedure on a bill of review?
None whatsoever. In fact, bill of review was not uttered. A request to vacate that CSRO was not uttered by either party, by either attorney for either party. This was sua sponte, the trial court, so spoke up and said, I think we probably need to vacate that other order and get rid of it. Albeit, I think the trial court was trying to be magnanimous and clear the way to establish the biological father to pay child support for this child, but the trial court was unmindful of the Dallas decision, in re SCL, which we cite in our brief, which points out that when you've got something like an adjudicated father or a presumed father, simply terminating rights does not in any way get you to the fact that there is still a presumed father in the case. And in this case, taking that one step further, vacating the CSRO won't get you past the fact that there was a presumed father in this case. And his status to establish a biological child had already passed. You have to do that within first 4 years of the child's life by the time the child's fourth birthday comes around, the status of, or the parentage of a child with a presumed father is no longer subject to establishment or attack. In this case, I'll admit it was a matter of days, but when that CSRO was entered, the child had turned 4 years old. So if there had been a trial, the presumed father would not have been able to attack the parentage at that time. So he would not have been able to offer biological evidence that he was not the biological father. So we're not going to be able to get rid of the presumed father, even if you say the trial court was correct in vacating that CSRO and the trial court was correct in terminating the parental rights. That takes father off the hook for child support here, but it does not provide us any ability to go and establish a biological father and get child support from that because of the statute of limits in section 160.607A. And I believe that also is in our brief under tab E for your convenience.
So let me clarify. So it's the statute of limitations would bar going after identifiable biological father to establish paternity with the biological father for this child because the child's over 4 years.
Correct. So we either have this father or we have no father for this child.
What happened to Monty Pope?
Mr. Pope will be excused because we have done nothing within the 4 years of the child's life to prove that his presumed father was not, in fact, his biological father and that Mr. Pope was his biological father. We cannot attack the parentage as long as there's a presumed father in place. In simply vacating the CSRO where father was adjudicated to be the father does not attack or do anything about his status as a presumed father. And, in fact, it wasn't subject to attack at the time the CSRO was entered that adjudicated father to be.
May I ask you some questions on AG policy?
Yes, sir.
And I'll move to extend your time, too, if I take too much of it. It's my observation in the last 10 years that once a DNA establishes that a presumed father is not the biological father, the Attorney General has said, go away. And now it seems that there's a policy change in this case. Is there a policy change in the AG's office? And I'm asking that, I guess, more or less for my own benefit because I will be gone from here on December 31st back to the salt mines. And
yes,
so
sir.
That's my reason. And so can, if you could respond to that, I'd appreciate it.
I certainly will. What we have is the Uniform Parentage Act, and as the chief civil law enforcement officer in this state, we enforce that act as...
Familiar with it.
Is, well, it's section Chapter 160 of the Family Code.
Yeah.
And the legislature made the determination that after the child is 4 years old, that it is too much of a psychological damage to the child when they've created this and bonded with their presumed father to allow biology to come in and trump that. And as far as long as I have been in the Child Support Division, we have always attacked any genetic test when there's either an adjudicated father, a presumed father, or an acknowledgement of paternity if it's not properly subject to challenge under the Uniform Parentage Act.
I've seen hundreds of them. This is my first one to see. When.
Well, I will confess my tenure in the Child Support Division is only 18 months long, so it's not the longest, and there may have been a policy shift.
Did this come up to Judge Melton Cute as a 4D court?
I believe it was, I think this is a small county where the
yes,
county court at law sits for the district court. So I'm not sure that it was a 4D court.
I just wondered if he was sitting as a 4D court that day.
That I'm not aware of.
All right.
I thought he was sitting as a family law court for the district court. But I don't know that there's anything in the record that indicated he was sitting as a 4D judge.
I didn't see that.
So,
thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt you. And I move to extend your time.
No problem.
But what happened to the fraud claim?
They didn't pursue it at trial. So they never
non-suited?
Asked.
Non-suited?
I'm sorry, what?
It was non-suited?
It was not non-suited. It was not pursued at trial. When you don't offer evidence of it and you don't seek relief on that fraud claim and don't get a judgment for it and you don't then appeal the lack of getting a judgment for it, it's it you basically have just waived your right to it.
So there was a judgment saying there's a take-nothing judgment on the fraud claim?
There was not a take-nothing judgment. There was no judgment at all. There was no relief requested at trial. It was simply in a pleading, and there was really no evidence of the fraud claim, and particularly no evidence of the damages that would be appropriate based on the fraud.
Well, all he needed was damages equal to, all he needed was to prevail on the fraud claim, damages equal to his future child support, and he was done. So, all right, that's just why I was curious.
Well, that penalizes the child and not necessarily the mother. The child support actually belongs to the child. It's what the child is entitled to. It's just that the mother should not have to bear the whole burden by herself. Father should contribute something. And when you've got a mother whose earning power, and this record does talk about her earning power, is so significantly less, it's not like she is going to be able to make up the gap in child support for this particular child as an element of damages. It would be the child who would be left suffering and without the child support to which the family code says he's entitled. It's one of those that there are two sympathetic parties here. I will grant you that. First, there is a husband who was lied to, but there's also an innocent child who was not part of his mother's misconduct, who is entitled to the support and love of a father. I think the trial court here, as we get into discussion of the best interest of the child, was also convinced that this man was a good father to this child. The visitation was ordered to be the same as with the other children, and he gave him standing as a person with significant contact with this child to have this visitation so that the rapport could continue. The two parents, mother and father, had agreed that the child will never be told of his biological father or that this father is not his father, and it's the only father this child has ever known. He's now 8 years old. He was 7 at the time of the trial. And the child is what the family code says his interest must trump anyone else's, including the father's interest in this case. And when that is the standard, it is clear that it's in this child's best interest that he maintain support. I would argue that it is never in a child's best interest to deny that child support of one of his parents. And I understand the feeling that, well, he's not a biological parent, but he is a presumed father parent, and he has, in fact, parented this child. And what he gets back in return for that support is the love and affection and rapport that he has with this child, which all the testimony at trial indicated was very good and a very substantial bond. There are 3 children in this family. 2 are biological children of father. This middle child is not. And the testimony at trial, I believe, was that the elder child, who I want to say was 10 at the time, 10 or 12, I'm not sure, but he was a quadriplegic because of an unfortunate and terrible accident that occurred during his childhood. And so there was not that, there was love and bonding, but there was not the ability of the child to go and do and be with his father the way the middle son was able to do. And the younger child was a daughter who, he testified, was not so interested in coming with him. He would work out of town at times on construction sites, and he would come and get SCB and take him with him on some of his jobs and those types of things. And so there was clearly a very strong bond, and probably this was the favorite child, I believe, is how it was discussed. Although as parents we don't have favorite children, but this is the one with whom he had the best rapport. And he wants to continue that, and he stated that, and is willing to do that. I see that I'm going over time, but if I could just...
No, that yellow light means you have 2 more minutes, so really you have 3.
Now I have 3. All right. I think the evidence in this record just is very slim to support a termination. I wanted to get to tried by consent, if I could, just a couple of things. Clearly, under the Bedgood case out of the Supreme Court, that if there is an objection to a lack of pleading, there is no trial by consent. You don't have to ask for a running objection. You don't have to object to every bit of evidence. In fact, you don't have to raise any objections during the trial. You can wait till the end and object to submission to a jury or something along those lines. Here it's conceded on 2 occasions there was an objection to a lack of pleadings to support termination. As to the bill of review, there was no objection to that, but that's because there was never a hint at trial that anybody would be thinking about a bill of review. 2 trial counsel raised the fact that we had an adjudicated father here and we would not be able to establish the biological father based on there being an adjudicated father, and no objection, no statement, oh, well, we're trying to get rid of that order by doing a bill of review here today, Your Honor. Nothing to contradict trial counsel's statements that there was an adjudication standing in the way of adjudicating the biological father in this case. As I said, it's very clear from this record that the judge sua sponte at the end realized that that would be a bar to adjudicating the biological father, and I think was trying to be helpful and eliminate that bar without realizing there was also presumed father status.
You had the judge in a catch-22 position, didn't you?
Well, I think the catch-22 position was provided by the Uniform Parentage Act as adopted by the legislature, that once that child turned four, nobody was going to be able to do anything to adjudicate that biological father.
You said that the presumed father was given a visitation rights,
yes,
in the divorce decree.
Well,
but his,
yeah,
parental rights were terminated, so was he named a possessory conservator?
Well, how they handled it in the divorce decree was they didn't name SCB except in a separate paragraph where they found SCB not to be the biological child of father, so they awarded no support and no visitation. Then they move on and award visitation for the two biological children in the divorce decree. In the order that we are appealing, the trial court says that he's going to order visitation for SCB at the same as for the biological children set out in the divorce decree. So that was how that was handled. But, yes, he said, the trial court said that he had standing,
okay,
to have that.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Harrell. Ms. Wren.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Jennifer Wren, and I am the appellate counsel for Mr. Benavidez. When I first talked to this case with the trial counsel, I realized that it was not going to be a pleasant one to come up and argue in front of y'all, because when you look at the law and the way the law is written in cases, Ms. Harrell is correct on a lot of the law. I mean, I don't have a complaint about anything that she stated to you legally about what statutes say at all. There's an adjudicated father. She's right about the 4-year statute of limitations on the actual biological father. And so I'm in a position in this case where I'm really trying to uphold a trial court's ruling. And it's not necessarily legal arguments, but more equitable arguments that I have to make. Because
isn't just simplistically,
yes,
once the child is 4 years old, mm-hmm, and the father has been determined before that, the legislature has just decided there's nothing
he can do. Yes.
He can do, period. I mean, that's just simplistically what we're looking at.
Yes, that is it, simplistically. I've had other clients come to me with similar cases, and it's unfortunate because a case like this, you look at the mother who kept this a secret for so many years and then blurts it out when it's convenient for her, because she blurted it out trying to keep custody and visitation away from dad. And so she decides that this is a convenient time to bring this up. And dad's like, well, I didn't know this for how many years, and now I'm stuck with child support until the child's 18, and it's not technically my child, although as the record shows, he does have a relationship with the child. So there's things about it that are fundamentally unfair, and it is the way the statutes are written. I think there's ways that you can go about correcting this. I don't think that trial counsel in this case and the trial judge in this case, they all had the best intentions, but maybe it wasn't executed quite properly.
Well, tell us how.
I think if they had actually filed a termination.
I mean, tell us how the statute says what it says, and the legislature's
okay
determined
well,
whose interest takes precedence over father's interest.
How can you affirm this case? Is what you want to know. This is how I think you can. The bill of review, without actually conceding that, I don't think you can find a bill of review in this case. There wasn't a bill of review ever. No one ever stated this was a bill of review until the findings of fact. So I don't think that you can go that way. On the termination.
And even if we could.
I don't think it's helpful to you.
They're 4 years old, adjudicated father. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So that's not helpful. With the termination, the pleadings are not they're not exactly a termination pleadings that were filed in this case by trial counsel. You would have to read between the lines on that quite a bit and say that this is where she was getting at, because it didn't deny paternity, alleged fraud on the part of mom. So you would have to kind of go between the lines to find that. I think as far as termination being tried by consent, yes, the trial counsel for the Attorney General's office did object a couple times to evidence. There's plenty of termination evidence that came in that wasn't objected to, but she did object to that a couple times. I lost my train of thought.
We were talking about how we would get around
termination. If you read the record, and I don't know if you have or not, but it's a very short record, it's very clear, to me at least, that everybody knew why they were there that day. You'd had a divorce that had been granted, and then the AG came in and filed a motion for new trial based on the fact that the child was left out of that decree. They had the new trial. This is the hearing on the new trial, and the trial court said a few times in there, well, we all know why we're here. This, regardless of what's being pled, where this is not a surprise. We all know why we're here. And the trial court knew that they were there to try to terminate rights, even though it wasn't necessarily pled and spelled out in the pleadings so clearly.
Let me ask a question. Mm-hmm. So the prior divorce, which had already been signed by this judge, clearly left out one of the three children?
Yes. What happened is they had filed for divorce. That during the course of divorce is when dad found out he wasn't biological child, got the testing done, found out SCB or whatever is not his biological child. The parties then had a final divorce set on a Monday, and I think it was like the Thursday or Friday before that the AG had filed their intervention, and I guess probably had things crossed. The AG wasn't notified of the final hearing that following Monday, so filed a notion for a new trial. And in that divorce decree, they had excluded SCB as a child of the marriage, which also not proper, but that's how they had done it. And if the AG had never intervened, that's probably how it would still be left. But they did intervene. They had a motion for a new trial. And so my point is after all these hearings and these documents have been filed, it was pretty clear what they were trying to do that day. It just wasn't obviously executed quite properly.
And what would be the grounds for termination other than I'm not a biological father, I'm an adjudicated?
It would just be a voluntary relinquishment by the father. That would be the only ground that you would have in this case.
But that's not pled anywhere.
Not in so many words, no. No, you'd have to really read between the lines on the trial counsel's pleadings on that. I do think the last ground that I think that you could consider in this case to uphold this ruling is kind of more of an equitable estoppel argument, and I think that actually is probably the closest thing that they did plead in the trial counsel did plead in this case, which is, there was a false representation by mom and a concealment of facts that she made these representations with knowledge of the facts to somebody who did not have knowledge and intended that it be acted on, and that the party relied on that representation. I think if you take that a little farther and you go into the fact that she all of a sudden decides to bring this up at a time when it's convenient for her, I think maybe she should be held to that.
It's the child didn't make the misrepresentation.
I know.
And it's the child that's entitled to the benefit of the adjudicated parentage.
Yes.
So where does that lead us to?
Well, you would have to rely on the trial court's findings, which are that this was in the child's best interest. And I know the record
cut off the child support? I mean, that's...
Well, well, that's what he found. That's what he found. He did find that it was in the child's best interest for this relationship to be terminated. There is some basis in the record. It's not a long record, so there's not lots of evidence, but there's some. This is something that the parties evidently had deemed best before the AG got involved. This is how they had resolved it. There is evidence. I think Ms. Harrell said that they didn't want the new dad to be involved, but I think there was evidence from my client that that he thought that the new dad should eventually be involved in the child's life and that the child should know about the biological dad, not new dad, but biological dad. And there's evidence that he thought the biological dad should be responsible, which we all know can't really happen, but he should be, in my client's opinion. In conclusion, I don't have perfect facts, and I'm sure most cases that come in front of you don't have perfect facts. If they did, then we wouldn't be here arguing about them. But I think the trial court was attempting to do what it thought was the right thing in this case, and I think trial counsel was attempting to do what was right in this case. They all kind of knew what was going to happen. I don't know that they assumed it would come up this far to on appeal. but I would ask that you defer to the trial court's ruling on this case and affirm its decision. In the alternative, I also think, I don't know the procedures for mediation, but I do think this is a case that is good for mediation. I think the parties, if they were able to sit down and actually talk about this, could resolve this case, because I don't think as far as my client is concerned, at least, that there's any kind of outcome that would be non-negotiable to him. So
let me ask this, so that we can think about, if you're saying it didn't occur rightly, how could it have occurred?
How could it have occurred
that we had an adjudicated father, the 4 years is gone? How could it have happened?
Well, you would have to leave a child without a father. You would have to do a termination, a voluntary termination, leaving a child without
a father. An agreed, apparently, termination,
well,
right?
Well, it would have to be agreed. I have done one before with a much, much younger child. It was with a baby, actually, when Dad realized he wasn't biological, but he was still adjudicated. And we did a voluntary termination, and the had an ad litem appointed for the child. Everybody agreed that that was best at this child's age. Age over four, it's a little more difficult because you are barred from finding a biological father to support the child. But I think it can happen. I think if mom remarries or if biological dad adopts, you know, there's lots of ways that it could happen.
So the fallout is there's no longer child support. There won't be child support from the real father unless it occurs somewhere in the future where mom decides to marry the real dad or the real dad. I don't know if you can adopt a child that you're not married to the mom, but that's the fallout.
That is the fallout. I know.
That's a hard stretch to get to best interest of the child, isn't it?
It is. It is. That's what I'm saying. I'm not thrilled to be having this position up in front of you today, but
you think there's a chance that y'all could work it out if we suggested y'all sit down at
the
same table?
I think the parties could, as far, I don't know, with the attorney general involved, sometimes negotiations get a little more tricky when they're involved, but I really do think the parents could, at least that's what I've been told, is that the parents could reach an agreement on it.
You have in this court today the best mediator in the AG's office sitting right behind you back there. I know that from personal knowledge.
Who, Ms. Jenkins?
Yes, Chairman Jenkins.
I love working with Ms. Jenkins. I have cases with her on a regular basis in Wise County. And
I don't think anyone on this court would object to your mediating this deal in about 10 days and getting it done. That's mutually agreeable to everyone.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Do you agree with Judge Brigham's suggestion?
Unfortunately, as the chief civil law enforcement officer of the state, I can't go around the statutes. I could not agree to a termination. I could not.
Wait, we just asked you if you could agree to mediate with the people, to sit down and talk to them.
We can always agree to mediate. Is what, how much give that we have to give, because a mediation is going to require give and take. And we are pretty much set with guidelines and what the guidelines say. And you know, to agree to a termination under this circumstance, the AG's office, I'm sure, would not go for that. And I would like to say, on the grounds going to equitable estoppel, since that is opposing counsel's strongest point, that I have cited you to the case of N. Ray SAP in the brief, a 2005 Texas Supreme Court case, where it does point out that equitable estoppel does not apply to the state, and that when the AG is doing its Title 4D functions, as we are in this case, we are, the state, entitled to proceed without restrictions by equitable estoppel. So even if it would apply to the mother in this case, it wouldn't apply to the Office of the Attorney General who is charged with establishing child support from the presumed father in this case. So equitable estoppel I don't think will work for them. As far as the pleadings go and talking about nobody being surprised that this was a termination, I will agree with that, but surprise is only an element when they've requested to make a trial amendment. And there was no request for a trial amendment in this particular case. The Bedgood versus Madeline, which is another Supreme Court case that's cited in my brief, points out that when the trial court overrules an objection to a lack of pleadings like it's done here, that is no implied request for a trial amendment, particularly when one is never filed. So the fact that counsel never requested a trial amendment prohibits the lack of surprise from making it okay to go ahead and try this by consent. There needed to be a request for a trial amendment. The best interest of the child, I think, is my strongest point in this case. We have a child with a presumed father who has a good bonded relationship with this father, where there is no reason to terminate the relationship with that father but for the father's desire not to pay child support for a child that is not biologically his own son. And I would submit that as a matter of law, it is never in a child's best interest to provide that child the support of his presumed father. And if you have no further questions, I will give back any other time.
All right.
Thank you so much, and happy Thanksgiving to all of you.
Thank you, and to all of you as well. We appreciate your arguments and your briefing in a most difficult and interesting case. You all have a safe trip back home, and we appreciate you coming to the court today. We are adjourned, and your case is submitted. Thank you.